Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on, we would like to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, plus there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
We are back for Orange is the New Black, Season 5, Episode 9. It is The Tightening, and Episode 10, The Reverse Midas Touch, coming right up.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yeah.
The animal. Trap, trap, trap till the cage is full. The cage is full, the day is new, and everyone's waiting, waiting on you, and you've got time.
Air. Wait, one thing I will say about that, I love/hate the new skip intro feature on Netflix. I love it, but for this purpose, sometimes I'm like, oh yes. No, I don't know the words.
My Netflix, it has not updated for that feature, I guess.
What?
Yeah,
it's really small.
Updated, oh, okay. It's a good one.
And everyone, we are back for Orange is the New Black, Season 5, Episode 9 and 10. And before we get started, I am Scott Moore. You can find me on Twitter at SMAN80. That's SMAN80. And you can also find us on social media, hashtag OITNBABTV. And to my left, camera right.
Hey guys, I'm Sterling Cates. You can find me at Sterling Cates. Happy to be back.
Come here. I'm April Wissenhant, and y'all can find me everywhere at April Wissenhant.
Yay! Yeah, we finally got you ladies back. You've been traveling all over the world.
And, I miss you so much.
We missed you too.
Y'all,
so.
I've hated missing so much because, there's just so much that I wanted to talk about.
Just very excited to be back to talk about these two episodes.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I know. We're so glad that you're back because we definitely missed you, but glad you had some really great travels all over the world. But yeah, what were your overall thoughts with 9 and 10?
Intense. Yeah. Obviously, but this show has, like, really gone there with the intensity and with the, like, over-the-top violence and whatever it may be at certain points. But this is, like, I think farther than they've ever gone before with actual physical violence that you see.
Okay, so I like scary movies in general. Like, I like feeling scared. Yeah. And I definitely felt very scared throughout 9 and 10, especially in in the torture scenes and the whole Piscatella stuff, which we'll get into later.
Yeah.
But they mix, like, the entertaining value with, like, I mean, like, some scary scenes where you see, like, it's not what you think it is, but they build it up to be something, and it's not that, versus, like, actual things that are horrifying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have more specific thoughts. I have a few complaints as well, but we can get into that later.
Yeah,
pull up a chat.
Oh, yes, definitely. Let's definitely, please. I will kind of go on what you were saying, too, Sterling, is that I felt that it was sort of a little campy, some of the horror moments.
Yeah.
It was fun, but it was a little too over the top. And I know a lot of people will probably disagree with me, but I also thought that Piscatella in 9 and 10, although the torture scenes were traumatic and very upsetting to watch, which we'll get into in more detail, I thought his character and what was going on was a little bit too over the top. You know, it was, and I get it's an entertainment and it's a show at the end of the day and we're being entertained. But I almost felt like from what the show normally is, it was almost like, okay, this is not, now we're getting out of too unbelievable territory, and it's a little too campy.
What did
campy,
you think was unbelievable?
Too campy. I thought his character ended up being a little bit too campy and too, not realistic enough. And when we go into his backstory in 10, which we'll get into, and then seeing sort of the reasons what he did what he did, it doesn't really equate to me of why he's doing what he's doing
Yes.
This particular scene, maybe we'll find out in the last three episodes what the reason was. But for me watching as a viewer, I'm like, this, what he did was totally separate reasons in his backstory to why he's behaving the way he is now. And it's so over the top to the point where it's not even believable to me at this point.
I completely agree with that. So I feel like what he was doing with Red, and obviously we'll get into that now later, but what he was doing in the women's prison didn't really connect for me with his backstory.
Right.
But more than that, I feel like they were just going for the shock value of what he was doing.
Yeah, that's what was so
instead
over the
of
top.
Like abs- like I didn't care about his backstory at that point because I was like, this doesn't make me feel bad for him.
No.
It doesn't make me understand him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was what when I said I had a few
problems.
Yeah,
that was my biggest complaint with that. Is that
and we needed that backstory episodes ago. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And not after what's
while
happening.
We're going through it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or I just want to see more of a connection as to
fair
some type of I don't know, you know, psychological. Some woman figure that did something to him that made him somehow. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like I didn't connect with it from the backstory, and I just felt like it was so extreme.
Yeah, we're gonna
it
have to get
connect.
Into that
yes,
later because I have more things.
Yeah,
to say
I didn't
about.
Say,
oh, but, to say.
Yeah, there was a lot going on there, but this.
No
one's in
can
chat
we pull
right
up
now?
The chat on the screen? Possibly, I was trying to pull it up on my phone, but I couldn't get it. Please?
Yeah, sometimes, and you know, last couple weeks it's been a little quiet, so hopefully we'll get some people now that you ladies are back. They'll be excited and they'll be in the chat, especially to help us out when we get to some of the details of the characters and everything.
Right,
but
yeah.
You know, I loved episode 9 because I love seeing Red's backstory.
Yes.
Like
yes.
her way backstory, like going back to 1977 and young Red in Russia, which we have not seen before after all these seasons. We've seen a lot of her other backstories with her family life and in New York and sort of what their business was all about,
mm-hmm.
but more of the modern day, you know, slight past. This time we really got to know her roots. And to me, that did a better job connecting.
Absolutely.
With her, you know, which the rest of the girls were thinking, oh, she's paranoid. And,
yeah.
Right.
But it had more of a connection to me for what was going on with her thinking Piscatel was in there when everyone else wasn't believing because of what she went through, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, was it Morello that said, people don't just disappear
yeah.
out of thin air, but
exactly.
when in Red's background, yes, they did.
They did.
In Russia, they did disappear
exactly.
out of thin air. So
exactly.
Yeah, she definitely, that was a good connection
it
for that storyline.
It was a great connection to that storyline and also making us think, okay, yes, because we're thinking, oh yeah, she's so paranoid and she's, you know, coming off of speed and she's just out of her gourd from that. And you could see how the women there would think, of course, like she's
right.
crazy, like nobody's disappearing. And then the fact that she knew and realized that from experience was a better connection to me than Tim with Piscatel. But anyways,
yeah,
I loved
true.
It. I loved that whole scene. I thought, you know, I was also thinking because I do line producing, I'm like, oh, that has been expensive. And heck, here they are, like doing all the different set pieces and the wardrobe and everything else. So I thought they did a great job with that. You know, and I love again Red's lines. I think the writers do a great job giving her some really great lines. Like
mm-hmm.
she said, "My hot flashes are having hot flashes."
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job connecting back to her. You know, working in the factory, the grueling job that they had back there, the way that she didn't have any freedom, and what they tried to do to, you know, kind of go behind the scenes and do what they could to get away with it,
right,
with the denim
yeah.
making and the jeans and the Western wear. And
I like that it showed like her where her leadership side kind of comes from.
Exactly.
Because the backstory that we've gotten of her before is just like, oh, this woman who wanted to be a part of this group and, you know, all the other stuff that she did, of course. But I like that it showed kind of the beginnings of her really like standing up for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's clearly where she gets that
exactly.
from.
Exactly. And that she was powerful and doesn't back down. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really great positive depiction of her and her background.
And just fighting the system by making some jeans.
There you
go. Which, you know, you see that carrying over 40 years later.
Right.
And she's doing that now, you know, still
exactly.
continuing that sort of bucking the status quo,
mm-hmm.
which I thought she was great at. And we're seeing that glow. I call her Glow, but Gloria, I call her, like, we're best friends,
Glow,
you know?
Yeah.
Glow.
We're besties to go way back.
We're besties,
five
just call
seasons,
her Glow, you know?
Yeah.
You have dinner forever. But I love that, you know, she's having her own motivations now because
right.
she wants to get out to see her son.
Mm-hmm.
So now she's trying to convince, calling the warden directly, which was ballsy.
Yeah, true.
No better word for that at that point.
Right.
She calls him directly. She's basically, you know, asking how she could make it happen to where she could get the ability to have furlough to see her
mm-hmm.
very sick son in the ICU. And, you know, the warden's basically like, well, you know, you've got to deal with your criminal peer group
right.
and have the hostages released. And so in this particular episode, she's trying very hard to get in, to find a way
mm-hmm.
to get the hostages released. And it kind of goes back to the previous episodes. You know, we were talking about the right or wrong, and is it better to, you know, kill one person if you know you're
saving versus the many
versus right. letting right. that one person live knowing that five other people are going to be killed. It's sort of that same mentality where she's thinking, well, if I release these hostages and that weakens our stance for our demands, mm-hmm. but if I get a chance to see my son, who in her sense maybe is dying and she doesn't know,
right,
what's the right thing to do? And I think almost anyone in her position, anyone would do what she's doing to try to go out and see their child.
As a mother who's, yeah, that mm-hmm. I think absolutely she's doing what any mother would do.
Yeah.
It is interesting to see how the different prisoners are, they're either in it for the group or they're in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And each storyline has some version of that.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. And you see that in life in general. It's like, okay, what is someone going to do for the collective group versus what am I going to get out of this for that immediate, sort of absolutely. Pleasure or whatever it is.
I'm glad that they showed her struggling with it, though. And that it wasn't just like, oh, okay, let me just do this.
Yeah.
Because she has been a person that's, like, supported the group and
of course.
Has helped so many people throughout this entire series.
Mm-hmm.
Because, honestly, I thought initially she would just be like, okay, no, I'm going to release them and whatever. Which, of course, she had to have a little turmoil of it because there were two people guarding him. So it's not like it was just the easiest thing in the world for her to do.
Right.
But I'm glad that they didn't just make it be like, okay, this is a quick and easy decision.
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, myself put in that situation, it probably would have been an easy decision.
No, April, but you're actually absolutely right, though, about that, is that they gave her more texture and that it wasn't such an easy thing. Because she has been, like, a mom figure to so many of these women, including Daya and throughout the seasons. And so it is difficult because she knows for the greater good, these hostages are bargaining tool and bargaining chip for what they want, and it's a hard thing, but then when she's got her son, she's gonna do what it takes to...
Elaida, like, when she shows up outside the prison right after Daya has turned herself in, that whole scene was that was one of my favorite scenes,
episode.
Yeah.
But then that conversation that Elaida and Gloria have mm-hmm. about, I hope your... Whatever the line was that she said, like, I hope your son doesn't end up the way that you, like, are to him, and she's like, I believe that too. I was like crying a little bit or whatever.
Yeah.
But you could see her, like conflict with making the decision because she's going against her friends.
Yeah.
And,
It's crazy to relate it to what she's going through in the sense of because, like, Elaida's so mad at her, she's like, all you had to do was be like just as bad of a mother, not a worse mother. And it's like, I have my own stuff to go through, honey. Like, it's like so many people have put so much stuff on her, and she can't even, like, deal with her own real problems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I love that scene, too.
No, I love it, too. And I also see it from Elaida's side, too, in the sense that even though it's not right, her thing was, I basically left you there when I left prison, left meeting Gloria to take care of Daya, and you basically failed at that responsibility from her perspective. Not saying it's right or not, but from her perspective, it was like you were supposed to be like the mom figure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on her, make sure she stays out of trouble, and you did exactly the opposite in that sense, even though it really had nothing to do with her and it wasn't her fault.
Right.
But I can see from her side, but it was such a great, a scene, and I also love the fact that when she does bitch her out, that cop is like all into it.
He's like, I like you. You're magnificent. Whatever he said.
Just going back to the problem. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I was just like, of course.
Yeah. I was like,
she did look
good,
though.
She did. But she always does, And that's her, and that's her style because she knows she does, and she's going to, she enjoys being able to kind of flaunt that. But
to work it.
Yeah, exactly. But that was one of my favorite scenes of this episode, without a doubt, besides the red flashback, which I think is probably my favorite of the season so far. I loved Frida's, though.
I really like Frida's.
She had her own, like, theme song, which none of the other girls had that. So I love that, too, and it was so much fun.
And that's still playing out now.
It still plays out now, exactly. So I have to say it's close, but I think we learned so much about Red and just going back and was so well done. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this episode, we see that the women are slowly but surely starting to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we kind of get the creepy, what's going on? All of a sudden people are just,
are
going away. And at the same time, we're also having Fig still there as a negotiator and working with Tasty, which I also love that, too, because it's giving Tasty a really good opportunity of showing, not only because she... To me, Tasty's also a natural leader, and we've always known that.
Right.
And she's smart, and she knows what she's talking about. She can back up her arguments with facts and figures, and I absolutely love that. So I love that she's sort of taking on that team leader role during these negotiations with Fig, and she's not putting up with her crap either.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she's not backing down. I loved these two episodes. I was cheering for her from behind the computer screen.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of course, I'm like 100% team Tasty. But I liked the dynamic between her and Fig. Like, I like that Fig isn't like, oh no, like kind of almost scared like the other people were, back down a little. I love that she's like, well, this is happening. Well, a guard was just chopped in your garden four days ago or whatever.
One of my favorite lines in this episode was when, I think it was this episode, correct me if I'm wrong, but was when Tasty goes, I think it's to get Caputo out of poo. Mm-hmm. And, yes. Cindy's like, so how's life outside of prison? Yeah. Yeah. And Fig's like, well, we have these things that we can look at when we want to leave a conversation. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm going to use that in my real life.
That is so good. And it's so true. Yeah. Hello, how many people are sitting there?
She's like, okay, well, I'm just going to use the bathroom.
Yeah, I love that.
That was a great line. So yes, but that was the line where he does come in to help them out. And it kind of goes back to some of the previous seasons where you saw him being a creep.
Right.
And then you see him like, okay, he kind of does care for them and he does want to do what's in their best interest. And I still always have that conflict, and I know that that's sort of what the writers are doing, because mm-hmm. then they kind of bring him back where he's in his boxers and, you know, kind of grungy, and you're like, oh, there's the
kind of
creepy.
Well, he's in that, though, because of them.
Of course. But you see that, and it kind of brings you back to that, like, oh, that's the creepy Caputo, and then, you know, he's kind of disheveled and everything. But there he is, again, trying to do what's best. And the whole tension with him and Fig was so funny.
And was the comment she made about his boxers, and he responded, does that mean she gave him the boxers?
She gave him the boxers.
I was like, oh no, this is so creepy.
Of course he's wearing those.
Right, exactly. Boxers. Too perfect. I mean, that's
but
so funny.
Their sexual tension is something real, though, and it's a lot stronger. Or I almost like it more than him and, of course, I'm going to blank on Linda.
Linda.
I love when she walks up and she's like, please, do you want me to say I'm sorry? I can't help it. Your singing was terrible. And he's like, yeah, she's a new transfer from the psych ward. Because she just needs to go at this point. But
yeah, she was annoying. And it was funny that he just sort of got rid of her because she was trying to come in and kind of ruin what he was trying to work on there.
What he was doing.
But yeah, you can see that tension between him and Fig, and that's what made it so funny.
And it got even more so in the next episode, too.
It was fun, and Linda's responses were fun, too. Yeah.
Oh, Linda.
You know, and then we still have the Alex Piper thing, which I'm like...
Yeah.
So I know we've had the discussion that, she's a little more, a little more mature, or both of them are a little more mature, and I think that part of it is that we're not focused on them as much.
Right.
So instead of giving them any kind of drama, we're just sort of letting it play out, and sort of they are together, they're not, they are, but they are, and... You know, it's just...
I'm not going to lie. I don't hate it.
They get kidnapped in the shower.
Which is horrifying to get kidnapped. But in the shower. And then he wraps them in the shower
curtains. Yeah, they're bound by the curtains.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That whole thing was just over the top. But we can get to that later. But, because you just have the creepy scenes with all the characters, with him, but also with Angie, with the phone call to Black Cindy.
Really,
and then the girls, the makeup, I'm just
Maritza and Flocka
with their whole singing for they're trying to do for their video, and they're making it look creepy. Yes, it was fun and cheeky, but it was also okay, come on.
I think they did it because clearly they knew what the heaviness of the episode would be if they just had Piscatella attacking people
the
whole time.
And they had to, go to the other extreme, but it was especially with the Angie phone calls, we really didn't need that. It could have just been phone call, and then it was dead when she picked it up or something. But here I am trying to write and produce it, but that's my own thing. I loved going back to Linda and we'll get into more of her with Ten, with Boo and all that. But I love the way that Caputo basically is throwing her away.
Right. Yeah.
Don't insult his singing. Which is why exactly. He's literally why he's mad at her, because she said he was a bad singer.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, she's in some serious trouble, like, throughout the prison, obviously, because she doesn't know how to survive in those conditions that she set up.
Slash is in a full-on lesbian relationship now. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, but now gosh, you picked the wrong person to be in a prison relationship with. Mm-hmm. The one who's, like, the most serious, that's like, oh, I love you, baby. This is going to last forever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, because it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Any other things before we move on to 10? Because we've got some time today, but I'm just
Well, the whole torture stuff was episode 9.
Well, I think that was like 10. Everybody sort of gets pulled away. I mean, there's a lot of heavy stuff in 10 that we're not going to go into. But
moving right along.
9 ends when Red enters the room, like the hostage room for the first time, because she finds the map in her cookbook.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which also was a little bit like, okay, you know, when I always forget how to say her name, brings in the book, and then she opens it up, and then conveniently the map was in there. I was like, okay.
But wasn't the map from something earlier in the
It was
season?
From, what I was thinking it was from Frida's map to her
That's what
bunker.
But it was her map to the bunker because it leads to the bunker.
So it leads to the bunker.
Yeah.
So she had put it in there, and that was, it was sort of a clue as to, like, oh, okay, so we knew, for me, that's how I knew there was going to be a connection.
Right.
Which we'll get into with 10.
Wait, so that just happened? It's a coincidence that Piscatella just happened to be holding them right at the point of, like, where the map was?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It's just a coincidence because that it's the entrance to the bunker.
That was the coincidence, but he had found the map, I guess, probably when, you know.
Okay, so you're thinking he found the map and put it in there on purpose.
And put it in there because that's where he was putting all the women and the hostages were in that room.
That makes it seem like way too coincidental.
I didn't think that he had any.
Oh, it was.
I didn't know if he had any involvement in it. Like, I thought that Frida put the thing in her cookbook.
Oh, you're right. That's what it was. To get her to go. Right. And then she put it in there. It was just a coincidence.
Yeah,
that's right. It wasn't the other way around.
That's just a coincidence.
Because that was the thing that was driving me crazy. I'm like, first of all, how would he know that she was going to open up the book?
Right.
And that it was going to be there.
Frida would know that she's going to open up the book.
Right, she's going to open up the book at some point. That's what I was saying. Like, that was the part that was driving me crazy.
And
like, this is so over
and
the
that's
top.
Why
like,
Frida was like, well, I invited her, but I guess she's
but
not
never
coming.
Saw her.
So it, like, makes more... It's
you're
like
right,
just
you're right.
Coincidental.
That was
the same
driving
place.
Me nuts.
Yeah.
I was like, how does he know that she's going to open it up, and it's the perfect map, and wouldn't he think something was weird about that? Because
but it's also not even in her possession.
No, it wasn't.
So, yeah.
That's why the whole thing was driving me nuts. I was like, this is so over the top, but of course that makes sense because Frida had put it in the book because she knew and she'd wondered why she hadn't showed up from the you know, and being like, she hasn't showed up, I invited her, and she did, and it just added to the paranoia because then Red found it and opened it up and was like, oh, because, you know, she was out that whole episode with the frying pan going through all the dark rooms.
Crazy. Yeah,
she really did, and that's why like Alex and Piper are like, what are you doing? And Nikki's like, you're crazy, and she's going through all the dark rooms, and then she and that was the thing she did. And I think that was this episode 9, right, where she found the blood from, what's her name, the first one that got hit.
Oh, she found it at the very end of the episode.
Yes, but that was the first person, basically, the first woman that had gotten...
Right, Flores.
Oh my gosh.
Flores, yes.
Of course, like, right when she gets really cute.
Yes. So she was the first one, so she, at the end, found the blood, was like, oh.
Something's wrong.
Something's definitely
wrong. I love that she, like... sniffed it and she's like, she just knows.
I know, and I put in those, like, she tastes blood, but, like, in quotes. Because
exactly.
Like, she didn't actually taste it, but
she
knew that it was blood.
Yeah.
And it goes back to her kind of cohort in crime there, which I thought was great about this episode, the way they kind of tied it up from the beginning to the end, because it was the first one that got attacked, which was her kind of cohort in this whole Piscatella thing.
Right.
Yeah. And then at the end, it's her finding that blood and knowing that she was legitimately onto something, and she wasn't as crazy as she, I think, started thinking too. I really think at some point when all the women were like, oh no, you're paranoid, that by the end there she was thinking, oh, he's here, but maybe I'm being a little extreme. But of course, going back to the flashback of that, you know, she realizes when her friend disappears that it's a legit thing, and that you know, there is something to be said for that. So
I think the only other thing, just really quickly, from episode 9 before we move on to 10, is the whole scene between Lorna and Suzanne where Lorna breaks her medication and she basically tells Suzanne she doesn't need to be on her medication, which is probably not the best move in these conditions.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because you're right. I skimmed over that. She wanted, and at first she went all in, like, trying to sort of be like, okay, I'm going to give her the pills.
Right.
And keep her going. Then she saw her all tied up and was like, you know.
With the makeup on. That was just, oh my gosh.
Well, she was trying. Yeah. She was just trying to make herself feel better because she's like, "Oh, the world tells you you're crazy, right. but you're not.
You're really not crazy.
Just like, don't let them hold you back."
Yeah, exactly. So then she's like, "Oh, you know what? You don't need this medicine anymore. You're fine."
Like, I love that Suzanne's like, "No, I do."
Yeah,
she's like, "No,
no, I really do need that medicine.
Yeah, I do."
Yeah, and she's like, "Eh." You know.
Yeah, and you could see, like, Lorna, like, struggling with that throughout the episode because she, like, hid those pregnancy tests. She's like, "Oh, maybe I'm not pregnant, or I am, you know, whatever." So it's. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. But it was also a very small part of the
episode. No, but it was a very important part because...
For next episode,
for the next episode. And which... And also, I was like, how did she get the stuff on her face, too?
That was from...
It was, Angie and... what's her name? Yeah, but...
They put it on her face.
But they left it Angie on that, like, that much? Because I remember
You don't remember whenever they were they walked up to her and they're like, oh, let's... I don't know what they said, but they were, like, messing with her because she's asking for them to set her free, and they're like, oh, no, and then they literally, like, put powder and whatever.
Yeah, I remember that. I just didn't realize it was that dramatic, so I was like, wait, that seemed more dramatic than I remember it being.
They're on, like, their own little antics that are just absurd. That are, like,
insane right now.
Absurd.
But the funny thing was when Marilla first walked up and didn't realize she was... She was, you know, and, bound. She's
like, oh, tied.
Oh, yeah. You should, you know, oh, honey, you need to learn about contouring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, she did that herself. I just
like, cracking up about that. It's like, you need to learn about contouring. I'm like, oh, my God.
Hilarious.
But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in episode 10. So, if there's not anything else that you guys can think of,
Let's
I'm
go
sure.
For it.
Because we, you know, episode 10, we're really getting into the stuff. And I love the opening is, with Frida and the gals, and everyone's playing Pictionary down in the bunker.
No idea what's going on right above them.
No.
Right.
You know, and, you know, you see intermittently, they hear sounds like, oh, something's going on, and they start thinking, like, something's definitely going on. And obviously we start to see now Piscatella is, like, full-on crazy. And episode, we get the flashback, which... you know, we can go into...
Let's just start with that, I feel like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that was a... Yeah. That was, It explains why he did what he did, because in the sense for the, you know, because they had talked about him killing an inmate.
Yeah. Do you think it was that prisoner in the shower?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the prisoner in the shower.
Yeah. Okay. So he's like this innocent young guard.
Yeah.
And he like falls in love with this inmate at the male prison. Mm-hmm. And then that said inmate gets attacked and raped.
I'm guessing.
Yes.
And Piscatella retaliated by killing one of the people who did it in the shower with the hot water.
But then, like, the other guy standing there is just as guilty too. He just let Piscatella be like, "Oh, I don't hear him screaming."
Right.
I mean, that was truly, like, to see that man in the shower.
Yeah,
like,
it was like that torture.
Nuts,
it was like one of the things that you do from one of those fun houses or haunted house. You know, you see the person being tortured, and it was horrible. But you see so many things that he did in this episode which were just so wrong. You know, first of all, having a relationship with an inmate.
Well, yeah.
And then what he was trying to do while the rest of the inmates were gone and punishing them so he could have the alone time with him. And all the things he was doing even before then that were so on the line
right.
of what he should be doing in his job.
Absolutely.
But I kept wondering, I was like, where did it get to point to where he would have killed an inmate, you know, in this male prison? What would have happened? And so we got that answer at least.
Yeah.
But then it still opens so many other questions in the overall behavior of what he's
doing now. Can I tell you something that helped me with this? Mm-hmm. So after I watched the episode twice, I was like, this still isn't connecting for me. I really don't understand it. So I Googled, like, episode 10, season 5, Orange is the New Black or whatever, and I found this interview that the actor did, whatever his name is. I wrote it down. It's like his last name is, oh, his name's Brad William Henke, H-E-N-K-E.
That's it. Yeah.
And so anyway, he did this interview where he talked about that scene specifically. And
which scene? The scene at the end with
him
in the shower?
So his whole backstory.
Okay.
So oh, okay. The whole piece
his
together.
His whole backstory. Yeah. So you know how the inmate, Wes, had he showed him the tattoo that he had gotten. Mm-hmm. And so Piscatella got the same tattoo
the
or whatever.
Tattoo.
Matching. Mm-hmm. So in the interview, this was a deleted scene. But he's in the interview... He told the outlet that he when Piscatella enters the room where Wes had just been beaten and finds him on the floor or whatever, he sees that his tattoo was fake and it was like rubbed off. Wes's tattoo up for Piscatella was not real.
It was not real.
He was like being fake with him so that he could get that, like those benefits.
Special treatment
of being, so like that whole relationship, when you see that the tattoo is fake, you know that the relationship was fake.
Yeah. Right.
And so like the actor said that Piscatella sees that and has a reaction to it. So everything he does in like, after that is him being heartbroken and him being feeling like everyone's out to get him, and never to let his guard down or whatever.
Okay.
But so for whatever reason, that was deleted from the episode. And I played it back and you can see there's like blue ink on his wrist that they probably didn't think anyone would notice. He's probably not even supposed to tell people that.
Right.
But the actor said he was really disappointed that it was deleted.
Well, because that's actually a big piece to everything.
Right. Because,
you know, at first I was like, when I first watched the episode and I saw him with the, you know, from the very beginning with the crossword puzzle and they first connected, I was like, oh, I thought it was going to be him that he killed somehow.
Yeah.
That he was going to be taken advantage of and he was going to be so upset that he was, or that one of the other inmates was going to come and he was going to kind of basically let him do that. So I had watched and thought, oh, that was going to be him.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to be turned around that way because that's a big piece to like leave out.
Now, I don't know. Obviously, I haven't seen the last three episodes, so I don't know if something along those lines comes up later.
Right, and explains again
but
why
it helped me with these two episodes specifically because I was like, okay, that makes more sense, but then why wouldn't they want me to know that? I might have just ruined it for myself. I don't know.
No.
The whole time, I kept thinking that that's what was going to happen. Like, oh, someone took advantage of him, so that's why he doesn't let anyone take advantage of him another way. But so I assumed that, and then whenever we didn't see it, I was kind of like, oh, maybe we will still see it. But the only reason why I was assuming that we would still see it in some way is because now that I think maybe we won't see that, it's like, okay, so why did you kill the guy? Like, for a guy that, you know, was faking a relationship with you that you most likely discovered then or whenever he discovers it, it's like you still felt the need to kill someone, to let that guy be tortured. That's why I think he clearly, obviously that stuff ignited something in him, but he clearly was just dealing with like some kind of crazy underneath it.
Right.
Because you don't just, I would almost be like, of course you're heartbroken that the person that you love, you know, assumingly just got beaten, whatever happened to him. But then you discover that maybe it's a fake relationship, which I assumed we would discover at some point. It seems like, okay, maybe you would be like a little hurt by that person and not murder the person that just hurt them.
Yeah, and I just hope in these next three episodes that they connect it a little bit more to his behavior today.
Yeah.
And why he's so extreme with these women. And is it that same feeling of feeling like he's being betrayed because somehow, you know, whatever it was with Red and
It's even that whole never let my guard down mentality. It does make sense to an extent with Red, but then it also doesn't connect back to the MCC agenda, and it also doesn't like connect with his hatred that he has for women.
That's what I'm saying. It's so intense that I'm like, I'm hoping they explain it in these next three episodes some way that feels satisfying, because right now it just does not feel satisfying to me. It feels like this is too extreme.
Yeah.
There's no connection to it, and now he's becoming this campy, sort of over-the-top villain that doesn't really play into the larger picture of what's going on with such a smart, well-written show and a cast.
It's got to come together.
I'm hoping the thing
that doesn't make sense to me, though, still, and I know everyone said, like, back in the first few episodes that we would find out what the tattoo meant.
Yeah.
So he got that tattoo, and Red saw it and was shocked. So she has no idea. Like, why would she be shocked about it?
Ooh, because she found the ID, the badge that had the initials, West, whatever it was, West Driscoll.
Yeah.
The WD. And so when she saw WD,
that's why.
Probably.
Oh, I was thinking like maybe there's still more to come as far as like, because I didn't know she found it. I knew she found the paperwork of the person that he killed.
Yeah.
But
maybe there is more to come. I hope
because I feel like, you know, we're now getting into the meat of the season here. We're going to get the climax and then, you know, so we're going to have a lot going on. I think these next three episodes are going to be very action-packed.
Yeah.
But to this point, that's what disappointed me. That's the thing that disappointed me 9 and 10 is that I thought it was too campy, which I know they had to have a little comedic relief because they were dealing with such horrible sort of torture scenes. But then the other problem was I don't see why he's that bad.
Yeah.
Where is this coming from? And that backstory didn't do it for me.
And I think what bothers me most is, like, he's going in there, like, completely rogue. He's not even, like, a part of the, like, jail system. Right. He's just essentially this random dude in there torturing people.
Basically breaking in because he feels this is his prison now, and he's going to end this, this riot. And now he's also instigated from feeling emasculated from earlier when they had the whole scene with the, you know, Judy King and everybody on TV. And basically, he knew that now these women were playing him because he thought he was communicating with humps and he really wasn't. So now he's like, I'm going in and I'm handling it myself. Like, he's now feeling like he's above all of that.
Yeah.
And he's going to go in and kind of, you know, get that back because he feels very emasculated from what was going on with the cops out there.
It just doesn't make sense to me, though. I get, okay, not that I get the stuff that he did to Red, but I get why he's super pissed at Red. But then, like, you, what in you, like, what reason, how did you think this was going to be solved from you capturing, you know, how many went, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 women?
All those women, yeah. And basically...
And torturing them.
Bounding them and torturing them. It was
breaking Alex's arm.
Oh, my God.
Like,
it was so...
It's just insane. So how did you think this was going to go? Like, I mean, he says at one point, he's like, what? It's, you know, 5, 6 inmates word against me. Yeah. Like, of course they're going to believe me. But, like, okay, there's the proof of what you just did.
Yeah.
Which I guess he could say an inmate always... But it's like, why why are you doing this? Yeah. Like, what is this coming from? What, from all of these other people? Like, just to shame Red?
Where, where's this motivation and to watch her be shamed? And it was... Yeah, it was that... That scene was very difficult to watch.
And like Nikki said, I wrote this down.
It was very difficult.
Yeah. And she said, I genuinely would like to understand how a man can get this effed up.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, me too, because this really isn't connecting for me. So if we could get to that part, that would be great.
I love that. The part, but I mean, you've seen, or we've all seen in so many shows, like someone cutting off someone's hair because, I mean, it's sad to say, but like hair for a woman, especially a lot of times, is a safety thing.
Well,
and I got chills thinking,
but especially when you're when that happens, and just the way that he—I mean, he even like cut her scalp. Is just—it's a true like sociopath. Like that's a true like just messed up.
It is.
Person.
It's and it's sort of the same thing when with the religious things when people cut men's beards that do it for religious purposes. It's that same sort of mentality, and it's a vulnerability to be able to do that to someone, and sort of has that, you know, now they have the upper hand as far as the power there because they're doing this incredibly torturous, vulnerable thing with the hair cutting, and it's a very big thing, and it was very uncomfortable to watch.
And him forcing all of the women to watch because he's
watch
like,
it as well.
Oh, you think she's so strong? Yeah. Like now, what's she gonna? And then when he like cut her shirt, I guess because he was like, oh, we're gonna let them really see what you look like. I mean, he only cut like a little thing in it, thankfully. But
he's also obsessed with like reminding them and making sure they repeat that they know they're inmates.
Mm-hmm.
He did that when he was a younger guard, and now he's doing that now.
Scene.
It's like, okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure they know they're prisoners.
Right.
Like,
well, sort of, again, that exerting of power.
Right.
And he feels this need to have the upper hand in everything.
Right.
And that's why I think it also kind of triggered him, again, going back to that cop scene, the TV thing, of where he felt totally emasculated and totally like his power was taken away from him. And he doesn't do well with that at all.
Right,
so it's always this power struggle to remind the men in the flashback scene and the women, like, he's the one, you know, doesn't matter what they think, like, it's his way or not.
Well, I think even in the flashback scene, he was like, he was just trying to establish some sort of power because, you know, you would see that he was like nervous about it after
he was
like, but then it's like something in him
but
just
then
switched somewhere.
He switched during that time period, though, with that relationship with Wes and the point to where he becomes power hungry. And then you see it now with the women, and I'm hoping again that we'll get some connective tissue there into why he got so extreme. But there are other things going on in this episode too that were quite important. You know, we see Suzanne going back to 9 because she's got a bigger role in this one as far as not being on her meds. And, you know, I was watching her in the bathroom where she's
washing
her face.
Yeah.
And that, which by the way, that monologue was great.
It was incredible.
That's an Emmy right there.
See why she wins the Emmys every year.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just, we haven't seen too big of a presence from her this season. I mean, a little bit, but not much.
But
that
was
scene
like
alone
Emmy.
I was like,
I'm watching an Emmy performance right there because that whole monologue. And, you know, the thing that's so great about her character is I have no idea what she's going to do next.
Yeah.
And I watched that and I was like, oh my God, is she going to hurt herself? What's she going to do? I'm like, bated breath, not knowing what she's going to do. And that's what's so great about her character and her acting. I had no idea what direction she was going in.
Right. Yeah.
And that scene was so powerful. Right. So I was like, oh my God.
And she was fully like, because a lot of times she's that her character gets very hard on herself. Yeah. You know, she hits herself, she hurts herself.
Yes.
But that moment was so powerful for me because she was reminding herself how beautiful she is, how beautiful her skin is.
How her skin is beautiful.
That the white powder was wrong and all this stuff. And I just found that so like real and honest and beautiful versus like seeing her hurt herself or harm herself or hate how she is or whatever. And
yes, it was so powerful.
She had some of the best lines in this episode,
she
for
really
sure.
Did.
That self-affirming moment was so great.
And when she finds Maureen, while we're talking about it, her I can't even look at her face and the infections and like everything that's coming out. Because it just reminds you that they're like, they need help. You
they
know
need
what I mean?
Serious and, help. And that was the thing that even she said that too. And it was so heartbreaking too. She's like, oh, the grown-ups need to help us now.
She's like, where are the grown-ups?
It's time for to go to the grown-ups now, and you need help. Yeah, and so it was sad. So like, oh my God.
I'm just so hoping that, I mean, because we've already essentially seen, you know, a very bad thing happen for Daya, obviously. I'm just hoping that nothing detrimental ends up happening to Maureen, because it was Suzanne that did it to her.
Yeah.
So I mean, that would I just don't even want to see it go because she definitely seems like she's like getting sepsis right now.
Yeah.
Like she's full like, on like circling the drain.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. No, absolutely. It's scary, and she really needs help. And that's the sad thing right now. She's not getting that help in this environment. But it was amazing that Suzanne had the wherewithal to say, no, you need help, even in her own state.
Right.
And just like being able to have those self-affirmations when I was like, I don't know what she's going to do now because she's not on her meds and she
can't
do anything. And it was crazy. But speaking of meds too, we find out a little bit more about humps, which is not necessarily good.
Yeah.
For the overall big picture of what's going on with the negotiations.
Right.
And we have Leanne and Angie also trying to go back, and it was so gross with the finger.
Oh my God.
That was disgusting.
I did love the line, though, where the nurse was like, that guy was
very
like,
hunky
I
nurse,
can't...
by the way.
Yeah. I like him.
He looks very good for all the craziness going on there. I was like, wow, he's maintaining pretty well.
Yeah,
like,
he definitely
really
stands out for
bad
just like,
environment.
And the grooming department.
Yes, the grooming department is maintained quite well during this.
Yeah, and I, speaking of him, I loved when he was like, yeah, I can't reattach this. It's covered in Cheetos. That was hilarious.
Well, also, it was true. It was like, the moment that she found it was just so gross and like disgusting. But the moment that she found it, I was like, it's already been there too long. It's disgusting.
It's like petrified at
this
point.
It's so gross. I'm like, of course it's not going to happen. But then they go and now their great plan B is to get Stratman out.
Oh my God.
My God. Which was like also like, oh my God. And his whole thing about, oh, you want to test drive the finger
first? It's so
first?
Weird how he like first
gross.
Jumped to that conclusion. Like, that's
what
we should do.
Well,
okay,
kind of
smarter
it up,
that it delayed time. Like,
yeah,
I guess.
I guess.
Weird that his mind went there, obviously, but clearly their minds are messed up.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, that's true.
At least it's better do that than have your finger sliced off right then, I guess.
Yeah, I know. That was his thing. But at the same time, it was like, she was all in it. She's like, oh, yeah. Like, let's go test for everyone.
But that also is what worries me more, is because, like, okay, great, the doctor is... They've taken the doctor away as soon as
Maureen
needs him.
Really needs real
and
help.
Now he's in the poo, and it's like, okay, so we go back to this whole selfish motives versus, like, for the greater good.
Exactly, because now she's... But the thing I was going to ask you is, did she... Were we supposed to think that she never really had an orgasm or something? Was that...
Yeah, it's like she's never experienced that before.
But I think she did.
And then she did with him.
But I'm saying, like... Before then, she had never had that experience before.
Yeah,
right.
she was saying.
Right, okay, so that's what we're supposed to... I wasn't sure how, like, if it was her, like, self, you know?
Yeah,
gotcha.
She's like, oh, I don't know. And then, so she hadn't...
So she hadn't really ever.
Yeah.
Okay, because that was kind of a unique thing that I thought was interesting, that just kind of sort of just came out. And it was...
Right.
That moment and then brushed away, which...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe we'll learn more about her character at some point, and knowing where she was at and why she hadn't gotten to that point yet, or what was going on in her life. Because I know she was very religious and came from that very religious kind of
she was
background.
Like an Amish,
like a Mennonite sort of thing. But it was very fascinating, like, after all that she'd never explored that side of her before, so right. I thought it was kind of fascinating.
True.
And now she's kind of experiencing that in a way, you know, which we've seen throughout this whole riot season and how people are sort of doing their self, you know, discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
It's been kind of interesting to see that, because that's another person that you would never think of. Right. And having this moment, which in a way was an important moment for her in right. the self-discovery period, which a lot of the other women were having different ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the other women starting their businesses and they're kind of starting their own government and things that they were doing, which were really, really cool. And mm-hmm. in a way, it was like that sort of offhanded thing, which I thought was actually a more important thing that they kind of brushed over, but there was a lot going right. on in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, and Andrew's just sitting there watching, so
yeah.
good times.
Yeah, exactly. They had a lot that they had to cover, because we still had negotiations going on with Fig and Caputo.
Right.
And this is where we got the line for this episode, because Fig basically says to him that it's like, you having the reverse Midas touch, everything you touch turns to shit. Mm-hmm. And that's where they really started getting into this intense thing. And Black Cindy's like, oh man, they're going to like go at it, like have sex.
Like
at her.
Sexually, yeah.
Because like, it was like getting really intense.
Well, he's like avoiding the what Fig is trying to say.
Right.
He's like trying to get around it because all yeah. the girls are standing there.
Yeah.
But it's true, part of what she says, like, you are the warden. None of yeah. this stuff could have happened unless you ultimately
right.
signed up.
Like it's
which
your,
he did because he wanted
did,
this title
he
and he
wanted
this
title
power.
And this, exactly.
And even though he has been trying to help, which I do, I mean, I
right.
think we can all agree that we genuinely see he would rather things
right.
be this way
of
than
course.
This way.
And he gets played every time.
He does. And we've yeah. seen it through the past couple seasons that he's a good guy that makes, again, like a lot of these characters, not black and white, makes really bad decisions
right.
and doesn't necessarily do the right thing. But overall, even though he's a creep in a lot of ways when it comes to
yeah.
his relationships and sexual stuff, he's actually a good person that does mean well, but he gets sidetracked by these bad things. And Fig
yeah.
does bring it on, but you have that extra layer of that sexual tension that was sort
yeah.
of brought in. And again, seeing Tasty as a good leader, reels it back in, like, all right, guys, you're getting way off track here. Let's
this
get
is
back
the point.
To what we're here to talk about. And
she's the only one in the prison with any sense.
I'm
yeah,
like,
she is.
She really is.
Seriously. But then that's when like they almost roll humps in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or when Suzanne almost rolls humps mm-hmm. in. And, I mean, he's...
The whole point mm-hmm. is he needs to be alive mm-hmm. for these negotiations
right.
to go through.
And now he's
yeah.
not.
Now he's
alive.
Not, which is like, ooh, crap. This totally now brings it to a whole other level. And, of course, it was convenient that Fig brings it up in that
right.
time period. Like, oh, well, where is he now?
Right.
Because we should see how he's doing
yeah. and
during
this negotiation. It makes me sad because she is finally showing trust in
right.
Tasty and
yeah.
in Caputo.
And then it's just
and they're like, no, trust us. Like, he's fine.
But then again,
whatever.
She didn't know at that moment. And she's, I mean... Yes,
exactly.
he had the,
that's
the,
true.
The he had the stroke
yeah.
and everything, but she didn't know that he was dead.
Right, but at the same time, it's like she just gave them her trust, and
no.
she's probably going to find out soon
yeah,
that he's
no.
actually dead, so
yeah.
she won't know if they were lying
right.
or they didn't know yet or whatever.
No, yeah. that's true.
So,
exactly.
you know,
it's
like
it's
at
setback,
that point, you don't know who to trust.
Which I'm like, wow, how are these next three episodes going to go?
No.
And then, you know, Gloria's trying to get the women to take naps
yeah.
so that she can get in and release the guards, and she almost successful. She tries to get them go. She convinces them, like, hey, you guys need to get a nap. You've been up, what was it, 31 hours? And she basically says, you know, medically, if you're awake for 31 hours, that's when
your
you die.
Your body starts
yeah.
to shut
to
down.
Shut down and you'll die.
I was
like,
so
what?
Happy that they caught her, though, because that just was not going to end well.
No.
Her
no.
single-handedly escorting them
no,
out, there's
no.
just no way.
No,
she would have seen
happen.
Her son, maybe, but
yeah.
probably not. But I feel like the people would have, like, jumped. She would have
that
ended up in the hospital.
Poorly 100%. Planned.
Yeah.
She can't just strut her stuff out.
Oh,
there.
I
and
know.
What does she expect them to just follow her like a little, like,
yeah.
duckling?
Right.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
That's not going to happen.
So I just was very happy that.
They
showed back up
yeah.
and shut that down.
I did too, because that was just...
I mean, I want her to see her son, but
I
also
too,
like, think there's
work.
A better way.
It was not going to work that way, exactly.
Yeah.
And that whole plan was not going to work. So I'm glad they kind of shut that down quickly, too. I agree with you, because
yeah.
that was driving me crazy. Because we knew that it wasn't going to end well.
Right.
And then, of course, Linda, with the whole thing with when Boo disappears, she's sort of out on her own, and she doesn't know what to do. She's lonely and scared, and then she's out in the poo, and all of a sudden... She
puts herself in the poo.
She does, yeah. as self, you know, exile.
Right.
And then she has that moment with Pensatucky, and they're Pensatucky's singing the red, big red theme. And
right.
I was kind of singing along to it too when she started doing it.
Yeah.
It brought me back. I was like, God, they need to bring back that theme again because it was really good.
Yeah. Really catchy.
And they were singing, and then once Pennsylvania discovers it's her, then that's the end of their
friendship. And that conversation, though, like before that happened, was important, though, because Linda kind of realized how shitty it is in there. And, you know, like the line when Pennsylvania says, people are going to leave here worse than they came, and that sort of situation. And Linda's like, I'm so sorry. Like, because she has such a huge part in that.
She did. And it goes back to her being all about the numbers and the budgets and the bottom line and treating these women like they're just a head.
Yeah.
As we talk about when you're working in corporate world, it's like, oh, how many heads do we have for these, you know, different positions? And, oh, we need to cut, you know.
Right. Yeah. Not actually considering that they're human.
That they're actually human beings and they have their own things. And especially when we're talking about something like a prison and not giving them their basic needs and everything else. Again, I think it's helping us see, and I talked about this last week, there was a whole article in the LA Times about how everyone should go in, an opinion piece, should go into prison once every 10 years, sort of like jury duty, to kind of experience what it's like in the inside so that people would be more sympathetic to the plight that people go through. Mm-hmm. I thought it was brilliant, and it's so well-timed to this particular season with what these women are going through.
Right. At least she's actually, like, learning something, because we're seeing all of these things that are potentially going to make a lot of stuff go awry, but Linda is in a position where maybe she could actually do something, so for all the, like, crap she's done and for how, like, terrible she's been, maybe she actually is learning something.
And the thing is, too, is, like, in a weird way, I think like she's going to have a bigger say in how this is all resolved because she's sort of seeing it now from the inside, which basically goes back to that opinion piece.
Yeah, maybe she can come through and then,
It's like being from the inside, be able to say, this is how it really is in there, and we do need to take care of these women, and we're not doing that the way we can, and we know budgetarily we can handle them because we've cut it 20% from the federal government, and the CEO, you know, has a shit ton of money, millions of dollars, and things like
that. And bonuses and
things like that. Okay, before we get to that final scene with the bunker girls and all that stuff, was there any other things that we missed? Because this is such a big episode.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Just that last scene.
Frida to the rescue, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We don't normally do sort of any thoughts of like, oh, what are we going to see? Because we haven't watched, and I know a lot of people out there, we really have not watched the last three episodes, so a lot of times we don't do theories, but quickly, was there anything that you think, what happened to him? Is this, you know, what happened to Piscatella?
Oh, I mean, well, she obviously, like, found something to, like, make him fall asleep with her little arrows. I don't know what it was, but...
Yeah. Well, like, do we think he's dead?
Well, that's what I'm saying, like...
I don't think he's
dead. I don't think so either.
I don't think he's dead.
She basically said, oh, devil's breath or whatever, you know?
She says something about him being knocked out.
Right. It was sort of like the tranquilizer that you give a bear.
Yeah.
Basically.
I assume he's going to become part of the hostage situation. They're going to use him to...
I cannot wait to see, because this was, again... very convenient but perfect way to lure him in.
Yeah.
And they got him in, and then she took the blow dart out and claimed it was devil's breath, but we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
I mean, and even though Alex has a broken arm and Red's head's messed up but like I feel like them having him in their custody is a huge thing.
Yeah. Huge. The whole control, the whole dynamic has now shifted, and I cannot wait. These last three episodes could be epic, and next week we will be back with episodes 11 and 12. We are getting close to the penultimate episode.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Penultimate episodes before we get to the finale in 2 weeks. Yes. So until next week, where can they find you guys?
Y'all can find me everywhere at April Wissenhant.
And you can find me at Sterling Cates.
All right, and you guys can find me at SMAN80. That's SMAN80. And you can follow us on social media, hashtag OITNBABTV. And we will be back next Tuesday with episodes 11 and 12 of season 5, Orange is the New Black. We're getting there.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.